just tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Two Westerns coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke. But right now, it's The Six Shooter with a story at M. This NBC broadcast stars Jimmy Stewart from April 1st, 1954.
Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western Territory, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
This was my first trip into Powder Creek for, 3 months, I suppose. Working the spring roundup for Bar Y have been keeping me pretty busy, and there hadn't been any special reason for coming to town. But I figure it's about time to make an appearance. Scar's saddle was showing a lot of wear and tear, and, well, my own outfit didn't exactly look like it had just arrived fresh from the mail order house. Pants were getting a little thin around the seat, and there was a pretty big hole in the sleeve of my jacket. I'd tried to patch it up, but I hadn't done a very good job. So I left Scar at the livery stable and headed over to Ethan Green River's general store. I aimed to get another jacket, a new pair of breeches, shirt or two. And I'd probably be able to find out what's been going on in the town while I was at it. Ethan usually managed to keep up on the latest Powder Creek happenings. Well, the store hadn't changed much. Everything seemed to be about the same. And Ethan, he hadn't changed much either. He must be almost 65 by now. He sure didn't look that old, though. Standing there by the pickle barrel, munching on a great big fat juicy dill. Howdy, Ethan.
Well. I've been wondering when you was going to honor us with your presence, Britt.
And that's so.
Yes, sir. I was remarking about you just this morning. Told Miss Bennett, when she come in to get some yardage for a new dress, I said to Miss Bennett, about time for the Six Shooter to be coming into town. He's sort of overdue, I said.
Overdue? What are you talking about, Ethan?
Well, there's milk for you, for one thing. Letter. Somebody in Topeka, Kansas, from the looks of the envelope.
Oh, must be from Aunt Emma. She lives in Topeka.
Oh, she does, eh? Well, here you are, Britt.
Thanks.
According to the postal rules, I should have sent it back when you didn't show up, but I figured I could stretch your point. Well, ain't you going to read it?
Oh, sure.
Oh, my. Oh, that pickle sure is bitter.
Yeah, Brett.
Must have got too much vinegar in this batch. I ain't very fond of dills anyhow. Don't know why I keep on eating them.
Holy smoke.
Hmm? Was something the matter, Brett?
Holy. Well, it's a letter from Aunt Emma. She's coming out here to Powder Creek.
Oh, going to pay you a little visit, huh? Well, now, ain't that nice?
No, it's more than just a visit, Ethan.
Oh?
No, she's figuring on settling down here.
Well.
She aims to make this her home, look.
Uh-huh. Well, there's lots worse places a buddy can live.
No, but she expects me to live with her. She says she's going to keep house for me.
That's real considerate of her.
But I appreciate her wanting to look after me. But, doggone it, Ethan. Now, you know I couldn't settle down, not permanently. I'm used to traveling around and living alone and bunking wherever my fancy strike. You know that.
Yeah, sure. But maybe it's good for you to take root someplace, huh? You know what they say, Britt. Rolling stone gathers no moss. Living alone does have its disadvantages.
Oh, well, now you're a fine one to talk.
Well,
I haven't noticed you making any effort to acquire a family.
Oh, now look here, I'm a lot older than you are. Too old to change my ways. But you're still a young buck. You ought to be sort of a pliable, like. Yes, sir, I think you ought to take your hand up on this here offer of her.
You don't think anything of the kind,
well,
Ethan.
You do.
No, you do not. You're just trying to get my goat, that's all.
Not at all.
I know you. I'll just write Aunt Emma tonight, and I'll thank her for what she wants to do for me. I'll just explain to her and tell her.
I kind of doubt that a letter would reach her in time to hit her off for you.
What?
Yeah, that one she sent you has been here for several weeks now.
I guess I'll just send her a telegram then. That line out of Powder Creek is still working, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Ain't been a single breakdown lately, not since them Apaches headed south back into their own territory.
Yeah, well, that's what I'll do then. I'll just telegraph her.
I kind of doubt that a telegram would do much good either.
Huh?
Seeing as how your Aunt Emma's already in Powder Creek.
Yeah, well, I'll send her one anyhow.
What? Yes, she got here a week ago last Tuesday. Come in on a Santa Fe. Brung a whole load of furniture, too.
Well, now, hold on, Ethan. Now, you're not serious. You're joking.
Well,
about
no,
it.
I'm not. Just you take a stroll over to the old Mac Dennis house. You know, on the corner behind the bank?
Yes, sir.
Your aunt rented the place right after she arrived. Must be all moved in by now.
Well, I just don't know what to say.
I understand she's got your room all fixed up waiting for you.
My room?
Well, that's what she's here for, ain't it? To look after you.
Well, I don't need any looking after.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not, but it appears your Aunt Emma's got other ideas. Seems to be a real understanding lady, though. Says it's all right for you to keep Scar if your heart's set on it.
To keep Scar? What?
Well, she probably don't care much for horses herself, you see.
Now, you just listen to me, Ethan Green River. I'm not going to live here in that... I never asked Aunt Emma to go. She shouldn't take it upon herself to, without my... With the old Mac Dennis house, you said.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Ain't very fancy, but from here on, it's going to be home sweet home. Hey, Britt?
Yeah, I'll just see about that.
How you've grown, Britt.
Oh, now, Aunt Em, now. I had my full growth the last time you saw me. I was 25 years old.
Well, now it seems to me you've shot up some since then. Not much flesh on you, though. Fact is, you're just plain skinny.
Yeah, well, I reckon being so tall will make me a little thinner than I really am, you know, sort of appear to be.
Your father was just as tall as you are, but... He must have been a good 20 pounds heavier.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Well, we'll put some flesh on those bones of yours. A couple of good home-cooked meals, and you'll start filling in.
Yes.
You like the house, Britt?
Yes. It seems real comfortable.
Well, I haven't quite finished unpacking yet, and some of the big pieces have got to be moved. I was waiting for you to give me a hand.
Yes, I'll be glad to, Aunt Em.
Your room's right over there if you want to take a look at it.
Well...
Go on, Britt, go on. Oh, you needn't be afraid I fixed it up real frilly or anything like that.
Oh, no, I wasn't worried about that. It looks fine. It's just fine.
Just take a good feel of that bed.
Now,
I bet you don't get a soft mattress like that in the bunkhouse where you've been sleeping.
No, we sure don't.
I'm working on a patch quilt for it. Started before I left Kansas. Expect I'll have it finished up in a week or so. Well...
Adam, before you go to much trouble...
Yes, Rick?
I didn't know you were coming to Powder Creek.
Yes, Mr. Green River told me you hadn't been in to pick up my letter. You must have been kind of surprised to find out I was already here.
I was practically flabbergasted, yes. Whatever made you decide to come west?
I'll tell you all about it while I'm fixing supper. Come on out in the kitchen.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, shucks. I was going to have a real fancy meal for you first night in your new home, but you didn't give me enough warning. So I'll just have to warm up yesterday's pot roast, if that's all right.
Oh, there's nothing I like better.
Oh, there's some potatoes in that sack. Would you mind peeling a couple of them for me?
No, not a bit.
Right here. Here, now use this pan. There's a knife in the drawer beside you. Not the butcher knife, Fred. Here now, this one.
Oh, I see. That'll be better.
Well, now, about my coming to Powder Creek, Rick. I just felt it was my bounden duty.
You, ma'am?
Well, you see, Carrie got married last February.
Carrie?
My youngest girl, your cousin Carrie.
Oh, cousin Carrie.
She was almost 30, and I was beginning to wonder whether she'd ever get a... Well, she finally found herself a real nice man. Yes, he works for the Santa Fe Railroad Company. Got me a train ticket at half price.
Uh-huh, is that so?
Well, anyway, after she left home, that meant my family was all taken care of. My immediate family, that is.
Uh-huh.
And then I got to thinking about you. My only brother's son. All alone with nobody to look after you.
Well, I've been getting along all right, Aunt Em.
Now, don't you try to tell me that. If ever I saw a man that needed a woman to take a hold of him, why, those clothes you're wearing are a disgrace.
Oh, yes, these are... Well, I was going to buy some new ones today.
Well, if they was washed and ironed and mended proper, you wouldn't be needing new clothes all the time. A wife, that's what you really ought to have. But I suppose you're like the rest of the Ponsetts. Put off everything until the last minute.
Well, I don't know.
Going it alone is expensive, Fred. Oh, I'm not saying the two can be the cheapest ones. And I don't want you to get the idea that I expect you to support me.
Well, it's never even crossed my mind.
Oh, indeed. I've still got some of the money your Uncle George left. And my boys both send me a little bit from time to time. I don't imagine we'll have any finance problems, Fred.
Well, you see, Aunt Em, I'm signed up with the Bar Y, and I'm sorry, but I just can't very well stay on here in town with you.
Well, there are other jobs besides ranching.
Well, it's about all I'm good for.
Oh, fiddlesticks. I've had a talk with Mr. Allington at the bank. He says he'll give you a position the minute you say the word.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Me work in a bank? Oh, no, Aunt Em, I... In a bank? Well, I wouldn't know the first thing about it.
Oh, well, now that don't seem to bother Mr. Allington. He was real pleased with the idea. Said it would probably cut down some of his losses, having you as an employee. Ooh, what's the matter, Britt?
Oh, God. Sort of nicked my finger a little bit. Nothing serious.
Oh, here, you can use this piece of rag for a bandage. It's clean.
Oh, no, Aunt Em.
You don't want to get blood poisoning, do you?
No, better
go ahead now, tie it on.
All right.
And you'd better let me finish those potatoes. The way you're peeling them, there wouldn't be enough left to cook.
Well, see, what I'm getting at, Aunt Em, is, well, I'm not the stay-and-put type of man. I'm sort of used to being on the move. Understand?
But, Hunter, it's high time you lit someplace. Oh, I've heard about you and that gun of yours all the way back to Kansas. So wonder to me you haven't been shot up half a dozen times by now. At least those stories folks tell are true.
Well, the stories probably did some growing on their way east.
I'll bet I know one thing you don't. They've even got a title for you back there.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. The Six Shooter. That's what they call you.
No.
As if the name of Ponsett wasn't good enough. Huh. Well, don't you feel too bad about it, dear. After we live here in peace and quiet for a spell, everybody will forget all about those escapades of yours.
Uh-huh. Now, Aunt Emma, there's just something I've got to explain to you, and I want you to understand that
I know what you're trying to say. You think I'm making a big sacrifice and coming here and setting up a home for you.
No, not
it's
exactly.
No sacrifice, Fred. No, indeed. And it's not just a feeling of duty, either. The plain truth is I wanted to come.
Oh?
Kind of hard to put into words, but... Well, after George died, I still had the children to keep me busy. But now... Now there's no one. No one but you. I guess I'm the kind of person that just has to have somebody to worry over. Must be my nature. And I'm only 60, Briss. I ought to be able to run a house for a good 10 years yet. Ponsett's a long life, as a rule.
Oh, sure.
So I just don't know what I'd have done if there hadn't been somebody I could be of use to. I guess you're kind of a godsend, Britt. It looks like I need you more than you need me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I reckon we both need each other, Aunt Em.
Thank you.
made out about as well as could be expected that first night I stayed with Aunt Emma. I wasn't exactly what you'd call comfortable. The bed was too darn soft for one thing. And it wasn't easy getting used to having another person around all the time. Leastways, it wasn't easy getting used to Aunt Emma. I knew she had my best interest.
Brett Hunsett, you eat the rest of those turnips. They're good for you. And that... before I forget it, don't you think you ought to see about getting a haircut? It's hanging way down the back of your neck.
And whenever she asked me to do something, well, I sure didn't have any right to object. They were things that had to be done.
And a sack of flour, a spool of number 60 white thread, and some empty fruit jars. I think I'll put up some of that rhubarb out in the garden. Looks real nice to me.
And as for the advice she gave me, well, it was probably good advice. It's well worth listening to.
I just don't see why you can't try working at the bank, Britt. If you don't take to it, you can always quit. I'm not saying that you have to keep on with it for the rest of your life.
Well, after a week, I knew that I couldn't go on much farther, so... And when Dan Porterfield came in, I told him I'd be back at the ranch by the end of the month. But I sure didn't know how I was going to manage it. I just couldn't leave Aunt Em, not without hurting her. She just needed somebody like me to fuss over her. And there wasn't anyone else who seemed to fit the bill. At least nobody I could think of right offhand.
Well, here's the last of it, Brick. Coffee, salt, bacon, cut material. That's all in it.
Yeah, that's all, Ethan.
I'll say one thing. You sure surprised me, Brick.
I don't see why.
Well, I do. I figured you wouldn't stay on with your aunt not more than 2-3 days at the very outside. But by Jiminy, it's over a week now, ain't it?
Oh, no, it hasn't been a week, but it... Oh, it couldn't be that long. By George, it is a weekend. Well, the time sure does fly when a man's contented and satisfied, you know?
Huh?
Ethan, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. You remember the other day when you first told me Aunt Emma was in town?
Sure.
Well,
sure.
Now, the truth of the matter is I was kind of upset. I didn't exactly welcome the idea.
It ain't no secret, Brett. I guess I know how I'd feel was I in your place.
Well, that's just it, Ethan. I never realized... what I've been missing all these years.
What are you talking about?
I want to tell you that I wouldn't give up living with Aunt Em for all the gold in California. In the first place, she's the finest cook that ever lived. Why, her hot biscuits alone is enough to make your mouth water, and that isn't the half of it. She takes care of all my clothes. I can put on a clean pair of socks every day if I have a mind to do it.
No.
A clean pair every single day if I want to. But the best part of it is that I'm not lonely anymore. Gosh, it sure is nice to have somebody to talk to and to play casino with in the evenings. Huh? Of course, I know none of this sounds appealing to you, Ethan, but... gosh, I sure hope I never have to go back to living alone. Well, see you later.
Huh? Oh, yeah. I'll be seeing you, Brick.
Get a wick for the lamp.
Oh, yes, guess it did. Well, it sort of slipped my mind.
You sure aren't much good at remembering things.
Oh, well, I'll go back uptown and pick one up. It'll only take
a minute. Never mind. We can do without until tomorrow. Better get your hands washed, son. Supper will be ready in a little bit.
Yes, ma'am. By the way, I had a little chat with Ethan Greenriver this afternoon.
That's nice.
You know, he's... I kind of feel sorry for him. He living alone, nobody to care whether he comes or goes and all that.
Well, by his own choice, I'm sure.
I was just thinking, maybe we could have him over to supper one night.
Oh. Well, now, Britt, I'm not as young as I used to be, and getting on food for company, that's kind of an effort.
Well, but it wouldn't have to be anything special. And besides, it might be nice for you and Ethan to sort of get together, get a little better acquainted.
You don't think I'd so much as look at another man after your Uncle George, do you? I'm surprised.
Oh, no, I didn't mean anything like that.
Well, I should hope not.
Oh, no.
No, the fact is, Ethan is kind of spoken for in a way.
You don't say.
Oh, yes. Maud Hinsdale. She's got her eye on him.
Hinsdale,
yes. You know, the soprano in the church choir, the screechy one.
Oh, yes.
Come to think of it, somebody was telling me Maud was sort of worried about you when you first showed up in Powder Creek.
Worried? About what?
Well, I guess she was afraid another widow might give her some competition for Ethan. And she's been having trouble enough landing him as it is, you know.
Well, she needn't have concerned herself.
Oh, she's not concerned now. Not since she's seen you.
What?
No, at least that's the story I got.
Well, from Maud Hinsdale's information, I've had plenty of chances to remarry since your uncle passed on.
Oh, sure you have, Anna. I'm sure you have.
And now that you mention it, tomorrow night might be a very good time to have Mr. Green River over for supper. I was planning on chicken and dumplings, and there'll be plenty for three.
Well, now, you're sure it won't mean too much work for you?
Oh, what's a little work, Britt? This is your home as much as it is mine. Your friends are always welcome.
Oh, fine, Anna. That's real generous of you.
Be able to eat again for a month of Sundays, Miss Bancroft. That's all there is to it.
Oh, now, Mr. Greenwood.
It's the truth.
There's another whole apple pie we haven't even touched. I thought with two strong, healthy men like you, one pie wouldn't be near enough.
Oh, no, please, not another mouthful.
Well, if you're absolutely certain I can't tempt you to more of anything, I guess I might as well clear off the table.
Can I help you, Aunt Anne?
Why, Rick, you know I don't like anybody in my kitchen. You two just go in the parlor and enjoy yourself. I'll be along in a minute.
Yes, Sir Britt. You wasn't exaggerating one little bit. That aunt of yours is just about the finest cook I ever come across.
Ah, it's mighty nice of you to say that, Ethan, considering that this is just a sort of a plain, ordinary, run-of-the-mill supper. It's just about like what we get every night.
No.
Oh, yes. Sunday dinner. Now, there. That's when she really puts herself out.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yes, that's Sunday.
Well, you don't suppose you can manage to get me an invite to one of her Sunday meals, do you, Britt?
I don't know.
Oh, no, look, Britt, I'd sure appreciate it.
I can't promise anything, but I'll do my best. Well, for the next 10 days or so, Ethan was practically a steady boarder at Aunt Emma's. And he sure did put it away, too. Aunt Emma didn't seem to mind. She said she liked to see a man enjoy his food, and Ethan more than obliged her. I tried to leave them alone as often as I could, but as far as I could tell, their friendship just didn't seem to be progressing past the dining room table. Looked like I just have to sort of give Ethan a little touch of spur. So one evening after spare ribs and sauerkraut, while Aunt Em was out in the kitchen doing the dishes.
Oh, gotta let my belt out another notch. That's all there is to it.
Ethan.
Yeah.
There's something I've been meaning to ask you.
Go right ahead, Britt.
Well, now, you know I'm Aunt Emma's only relative.
Uh-huh.
In Powder Creek, that is.
Yeah.
She's sort of my responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I'm getting at is your intentions.
My what?
Your intentions about Emma.
I see what you're driving at now, Britt. Well, you don't have anything to worry about.
I don't?
No. I won't deny I'm real fond of Emma, and it's more than just a cooking, too. Under other circumstances, well, I might even consider asking her to marry me.
Other circumstances?
Yeah, well, you told me how you'd feel if anything happened to upset this little home you've got here, and I'd be the last man in the world to cause you any misery, Britt. Why, you're one of my closest friends.
Now, just hold on here a minute.
Now, look, but you can take my word for it. You and Emma can live on here together just as long as you've a mind to, and I won't do a thing to interfere.
But I'd like you to interfere.
Huh?
If you want to marry Aunt Emma, and she wants to marry you, you'd be doing me a favor.
No, Britt. I just won't let you make such a sacrifice.
A sacrifice?
Yes, that's just what it is, a sacrifice.
All right, Ethan. You can believe whatever you like, but I've made up my mind. I'm not staying here in Powder Creek. I'm heading back to the Bar Y the first thing in the morning, and after I'm gone, Aunt Em will be all alone here, all alone, unless you plan to do something about it. Well, I guess I really wouldn't have gone through with it, leaving Aunt Em, I mean. But I was pretty sure that Ethan really liked her. And all he needed was a little prod. Well, a big prod. Anyhow, I got Scar out of the bar and rode around for an hour or so. But when I came back to the house, Ethan's buggy was gone. Maybe he hadn't proposed at all, or maybe she turned him down. Well, only one way to find out, and that's go inside.
What happened to you, Briggs?
Oh, well, I just wanted to give Scar a chance to stretch his leg.
Oh. I thought maybe you were giving Ethan a chance to propose to me.
He asked you to marry him?
That was the general idea.
I see. You turned him down, huh?
Is that what you thought I'd do?
Well, I was afraid you... I figured you'd be worried about what would happen to me. That was all.
I'm not the least bit worried about what'll happen to you, Brett Ponsett.
Why?
Why, I've known since the first week you moved in here that it just wouldn't work out. It's clear as day that you and that horse of yours aren't going to be happy unless you're roving around somewhere, bedding down without a roof over your head. Oh, I saw those blankets of yours on the floor. I know how you've been sleeping.
Well,
yes. It appears to me that there are some men who take to being looked after and cared for, and there are some who just don't. Huh. That's why I agreed to marry Ethan.
You accepted him?
Of course I did. He's the kind of man who'll take to being looked after.
Well, I hope you're right, Aunt Em. I sure hope you're right. And you know she was? She was 100% right. Why, the next time I came through Powder Creek to visit Aunt Em and Uncle Ethan, well, sir, he was just about the most married man I ever saw. And so help me, he seemed to enjoy it, too. Well, of course, maybe when I'm his age, I guess I don't need to start worrying about him now.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Eleanor Audley and William Johnstone. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. By the way, you'll be interested in knowing that the Six Shooter has been chosen for broadcast to our men overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Services. This is John Wall speaking. Tonight played Truth or Consequences with Ralph Edwards on the NBC Radio Network.
The Six Shooter on Tuned to Yesterday from April 1st, 1954 on NBC. In the year of that broadcast, Jimmy Stewart was almost heard exclusively on The Six Shooter, except for two guest appearances, one in November on the Hallmark Hall of Fame, and before that, on June 20th, 1954, was co-starring as special guest on The Edgar Bergen Show alongside Lionel Barrymore and Marilyn Monroe. 4 days after that broadcast, The Six Shooter would air its final episode. It's an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, and now it's Gunsmoke with the story The Old Pal, a CBS broadcast from September 2nd, 1956.
Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, And that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful. And a little lonely.
Got the mail, Chester?
I sure did, Mr. Dillon. And if that railroad gets any slower, yesterday's train's going to start getting into Dodge tomorrow.
Well, that's happened a couple of times. Is anything important?
I ain't had a chance to look.
What?
Well, it took Will Borgler so long to get them mailbags sorted. Oh, say, he's coming over here in a little while, Mr. Dillon.
Huh? Will is? What for?
I don't know. But he's got something on his mind he's about to bust his britches over. He said it had to do with Jim Rankin.
Jim Rankin?
Well, I hated to bring it up, Mr. Dillon. You and Jim Rankin being close friends like you was.
I can't figure what Will Borgler'd know about Jim's murder. He never gets out of that depot except to eat.
Well, maybe he's heard something from El Paso, something over the telegraph.
There's nothing to hear, Chester, and there won't be. He was killed for that payroll he was carrying.
But they never did find the body.
Well, they buried him somewhere out there on the desert, more than likely, and then jumped the border.
They sure could get a long way south on $60,000, all in banknotes. Wouldn't be no weight to it. Wouldn't even fill a saddlebag. It's funny, I was always joshing him about that. A full-grown man being a messenger boy for Wells Fargo, going around carrying a little old hand case with him.
And being a target for every hold-up man west of St. Louis.
I know. I never had no call to be plaguing him. When I think of it now, I could just kick myself.
Jim knew you didn't mean it, Chester. Yeah, you know, he was one of the best. I rode a lot of country with Jim Rankin back when he was a lawman.
Evening, Marshal.
Come on in, Will. What's this news about Jim Rankin?
Just that you and everybody else is wrong, that's all.
Oh, why so?
Because all of you figured them killers must have headed south after they murdered Rankin. But they've come north, Marshal.
What makes you think so?
These. A couple of banknotes. $10 silver certificates. American Federal Bank of Boston.
Chester, give me that Wells Fargo list of serial numbers, will you?
Yes, sir. Already checked them, Marshal. They're on the list.
Where'd you get these, Will?
They turned up in my cash box at the depot. Somebody bought a ticket with them.
Who? Do you know?
It was Miss Lily over to the Long Branch.
Lily?
That pretty one with the yellow hair. She bought a ticket on the Santa Fe to Kansas City. Said she was aiming to go back there on a visit.
Why, them killers might be right here in Dodge, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, I hope so, Chester. I sure do hope so.
Stranger the last month, ever since
since Jim Rankin was murdered, huh?
I didn't mean to rub salt in.
No, it's all right, Kitty. In fact, that's the reason I'm here now.
Huh?
Is Lily around somewhere?
Well, she's upstairs, I suppose. I'm kind of surprised.
Odd what?
You. A marshal's pay won't get you far in that club, Matt. The dues are pretty high, you know.
This wouldn't be just a case of one pretty woman talking about another pretty woman, would it?
No, seriously, Matt. Didn't Jim ever tell you about it?
Jim?
Jim Rankin. You didn't know about it?
About what?
I thought you knew he was spending all his time with Lily.
No, I didn't. I'll see you later, Kitty. How are you, Lily?
Well, this is quite a surprise.
I understand you're leaving for Kansas City.
I'm just going for a visit. Is there a law against it, Marshal? Or do you care personally?
You bought a railroad ticket this afternoon from Will Borgler. You paid for it with a couple of $10 notes of the American Federal Bank of Boston.
My, you have been taking an interest.
Where did you get those banknotes, Lily?
Oh, come now, Mark.
I want to know where you got those bills.
Why, I don't know where I got them.
You don't know, huh?
Of course not. The gentlemen who come into the Long Branch are usually quite
generous. And the gentlemen who come in usually carry gold or silver. Paper money is rare in Dodge, and you know it.
I don't remember who gave them to me, and what difference does it make? They're good, aren't they?
Yeah. And they were stolen from a man who disappeared from a blood-stained room in El Paso, Texas.
How do you know?
Because Wells Fargo records the serial number of every banknote they ship. And these numbers match.
Oh, but
The man's name was Jim Rankin, in case you've forgotten him in the last 30 days.
Marshal, Jim and I were going to be married.
We're going to be married?
Is it that unbelievable?
It's just that Jim never mentioned it, that's all.
He knew what you'd say.
When did you see him last, Lily?
10 days before he got killed. He went from here to St. Louis and then straight to El Paso.
Did you know his plans, where he was going to stay in El Paso, how much money he was carrying?
What are you trying to say?
I just asked you if...
Sorry, I couldn't make it any sooner.
Will you get out of here, mister? You've got the wrong room.
Well, yes, I have. Sorry, folks, I was looking for
somebody
else.
Wait just a minute. You're a gambler, aren't you? Houseman over at the Alafraganza.
That's right, Marshal. Deuce McCoy.
Who were you looking for?
Nobody. I'll not bother you folks any longer.
McCoy, you wouldn't happen to have any banknotes on you by any chance, would you?
Banknotes? I'm strictly gold standard, Marshal. I got caught with some of that worthless paper trash during the rebellion. My apologies, ma'am, Marshal.
Why are you looking at me that way? I never saw him before in my life.
Lily, if you're in the clear, then I'm sorry for misjudging you.
You should be.
But if you're not, if you did have anything to do with Jim's murder, I'll bring you in for it if it takes me the rest of my life. Three days went by, and things stayed pretty much the same. I found out Jim Rankin had told a couple of people that he was going to marry Lily. And she could have been telling the truth about the two banknotes. Maybe she didn't remember where she'd got them. But she had lied about one thing, about not knowing Deuce McCoy. Word had gotten around town that she and Deuce had been thicker than thieves for a long time. But that didn't help me. Neither one of them had been out of Dodge in 6 months. And then one evening about 8 o'clock, Kitty came into the office with the news that started a landslide.
Oh, Miss Kitty.
Matt, there's something funny going on.
What do you mean, Kitty?
Lily. She didn't show up for work this evening, so I went upstairs looking for her. All her clothes, the costumes, they're gone. She's cleaned everything out.
You know where she lives?
Yeah, she's got a room at L.A. Grott's place, down south of the Dodge House, a couple of streets.
Yeah, I know where it is. Chester, come on, let's go. Lily wasn't at the rooming house, and nobody there had seen her since mid-afternoon. So Chester and I went back and took a look at her room in the Long Branch. Yeah, Kitty was right. She'd cleaned out.
Great goodness, Mr. Dillon, if this ain't the most upset room...
That's kind of a mess, all right.
Things thrown around every which way. Looks like a cyclone hit it.
Somebody was hunting for something.
Well, you'd think Lily'd know where things was at.
It was somebody else, Chester, after Lily had gone.
Well, where do you think she's gone to, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, she bought a railroad ticket to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Night train leaves in half an hour.
Yeah, we better get over to the depot. Come on.
You know, it's kindly hard to think ill of a woman as pretty as Lily. Man just can't hardly help believing anything she wants him to.
Yeah, I know.
Marshal, hey, I'm glad you're here. I was just aiming to send a boy over to tell you.
Tell me what, Will?
Well, about them two. They're here. Miss Lily and that there gambler feller, Deuce McCoy.
Oh?
Yeah, he's the one that brought the trunks in, but part of them's hers. He wasn't fooling me none.
Are they both leaving? Is he going with her?
Well, I reckon so. Bought herself a ticket to Kansas City, same as hers. They didn't pay for it with no banknotes, though. He used gold.
Uh-huh. Where are they now, Will?
Well, they've been hanging around down there at the end of the platform. Stayed clear of the light, I figured. Maybe you don't want to draw no attention to themselves. It ain't like Miss Lily, neither. Ordinarily, she'd have herself rigged out fit to kill. Be a strutting around here, bold as grass.
What?
That was down the platform.
Yeah, come on, Chester.
Straight ahead, Marshal. There at the end.
Yeah, I see.
Look, Mr. Dillon, somebody jumped on a horse.
Yeah.
Hold it there!
He's getting away. Couldn't have been nothing but plain luck in the dark like this, Mr. Dillon.
I'd have sworn I had him in my sight, so.
Marshal!
Yeah.
That's Miss Lily and that gambler feller. They shot both of them. He's dead.
Was it, Lily? Who shot you?
He came back.
Who?
Jim.
Jim?
I never thought he...
You gonna go after Mr. Dillon?
No, we'll wait till sun up, Chester.
Sun up?
There's no hurry, not now. I got a pretty good idea where Jim will head for.
How can you be so doggone certain he's out here somewhere?
Because I know how he thinks, Chester.
Sir, I never see such a country. Rim rock, gullies, mesquite, plum thickets. We couldn't find him in this stuff in a month of Sundays.
I think he'll find us.
Oh, dear, I'd believe you wouldn't talk that way. Mr. Dillon gives a man the willies, knowing all the time there might be a gun sight leveled on him and not knowing just when the shot.
Well, you know now, Chester.
Hold it. Right where you are.
He's just by that point of rim rock.
Oh, forget it. He's got perfect cover.
Is that you, Matt?
Yeah, it's me, Jim.
Leave your gun. Come up here. Come alone.
Stay here with the horses, Chester.
Don't do it, Mr. Dillon. You don't know what he's up to.
There's only one way to find out. Here, take my gun.
Well, I just don't like this. I don't like this.
Over this way, Matt.
Matt, you're a fool. I could have shot you dead.
I was betting you wouldn't.
Why did it have to be you?
That's the difference, Jim. It had been somebody sooner or later.
You knew it was me, or you wouldn't have come here. How did you know, Matt?
Lily told me before she died.
I'm sorry about that, in a way. Last night, I went to her room and found she'd taken the money and run out on me. I've been living down along the river bottom since I rode up from El Paso. I was...
What's the matter, Jim?
It was pretty good shooting last night, Matt. Dark as it was.
Well, we better get you in the dock.
Oh, no. Forget it, Matt. I know how I stand. Lily never did mean to marry me, man. She told me last night there on the station platform. And then she laughed.
Take it easy, Jim.
She helped me plan that fake robbery in El Paso. She was all for it, I thought. But she was all for the money, not for me. Never known a woman like Lily. All fire and diamonds and soft as a kitten.
Yeah.
You're funny. I know I'd do the same thing again. If she asked me to, what do you think of that?
I'm not your judge, Jim.
Matt. Remember the time that we... the time we rode out of San Antonio and we rode from San Antonio?
Yeah, I remember, Jim. We were planning to ride down to Laredo and see if we... and see if we could... Jim. Jim? Yeah, Jim. I remember.
In a moment, our star, William Conrad. When you're at home and use a match to light a cigarette or the stove, what do you do with that match when you're through with it? You make sure it's out, of course. After all, you don't want to have the house burned down. For the same reason, you wouldn't think of leaving the kitchen stove blazing away when you left home. But some of us forget these precautions when we're in the woods. Some folks will stroll through heavily wooded country, light a cigarette, and casually toss the match away without bothering to see if it's out. They'll also toss the cigarette butt away, still burning. And if they've been using a campfire, they may even leave that to smolder. From now on, make yourself a committee of one to help prevent forest fires, because forest fires are usually started by just such carelessness. Whenever you're in the woods or driving past a wooded area, break all matches in two before discarding them. Make sure all smokes are completely out and drown all campfires. Don't leave any sparks behind. They can cost our country millions of dollars in lost timberland. Remember, only you can prevent forest fires. And now, William Conrad.
You know, there were rifles of all makes out on the frontier. Springfields, Henrys, Spencers, Colts, Maynards, Enfields, Sharps, even old flintlocks. And next week, a man discovers it doesn't matter what it's fired from. A bullet kills a man awful fast. And that was the West.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The script was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Meston. The music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Ray Kemper and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Lynn Allen, Tim Graham, Lawrence Dobkin, and John Daner. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 2nd of September 1956 on CBS. That wraps up this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.